My name's Matt Bradford from CSIRO in Atherton. I'm a research technician or a research projects officer, if you like. I've been working here for nearly 22 years in North Queensland. So I'll just point out a few of the hazards that we have on site or in any rainforest.
Matt's holding up a laminated poster that illustrates some of these hazards.
Probably a major hazard will be the stinger tree, which grows to about 3 meters, has a big heart-shaped leaf, often with holes in it where insects eat the leaf. If you get stung by that, you'll probably cry for a day, scream for a day, and you'll have a few days off work. It's very painful.
Okay.
And you'll feel it for about 3 months afterwards.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's not good. I'll point it out to you if we see it. Any fruit in the forest, consider it poisonous. Pretend it's going to kill you. Calamus is a climbing palm, often called waderwile. It has lots of spikes, which if you rush through the forest and they hit you in the face of the eye, you're in trouble. We have a few pigs on site, which cause damage, but generally they'll run away from you, just make a lot of noise. Don't rush through the rainforest, just be careful. And the other thing that we tell people is snakes. There's a few snake species on the plot. We have a red-bellied black snake that loves to sit in the sun. So if you come to a sunny patch, always walk slowly, stand still, and have a look for snakes. We'll probably see some around here. And this time of year, they're very slow, so you'll step on them before you know they're there. So just be very careful.
It's a 90-minute drive southwest of Cairns in far north Queensland. You cross the Great Dividing Range and eventually come to the basalt-rich soils of the Atherton Tablelands. Here you find Robson Creek and what's known as a rainforest supersite, Australia's first large-scale rainforest research plot. This is Off Track here on RN. I'm Joel Werner, and today we're going to head deep into the rainforest. Well, eventually we are. First, we're going to get a different perspective on this super site via a quite impressive bit of equipment.
It's called a flux tower, so without going into details, it measures a multitude of different variables from the atmosphere and exchanges to and from the forest. In this particular forest, the canopy height ranges from about 25 to 35 metres, but some trees get to 45 metres. So we had to put a canopy tower in that was higher than the highest tree on the plot, which was 43 metres. So the tower is, I think it's 45 metres high. It's pretty high anyway. So it's like an electricity tower. So it's a 45 metre electricity tower poking up above the canopy, basically continuously measuring a lot of weather and atmospheric variables.
And we're going to climb it.
And we're going to climb it.
All right.
See how scared of heights you are, because it shakes.
Yeah, right.
It vibrates, which in some ways is a lot scarier than swaying.
And I see all the grills are conveniently see-through, so you'll get a good perspective of
that's that. Right.
No, I think I'm pretty good with heights.
Yeah, no, it's not too bad.
After you. So this flux tower is a massive steel structure. It's a series of platforms separated by a series of ladders. The platforms get smaller the higher you go, and the ladders seem to get longer, but probably don't. And the whole structure, well, it kind of wobbles. It starts to sway more and more the higher you go. Second platform, how high up are we now?
I think second platform, close to 10 metres. We can notice a definite change in what you can see through the forest. When you're on the ground, you can see a lot of shrubs. As you look up, it looks dense. We've come up 10 metres and the view's completely changed. You can see through the mid-canopy. The mid-canopy at eye level here is very dense as well. So it's the smaller trees, it's the lower branches of other trees, and you're seeing a completely different perspective of the forest.
It is
surprisingly dense at this level. I mean, the density is competition for light, really, isn't it?
It is. It is exactly what it is. And pretty well every three-dimensional space in this forest is taken up by something trying to get light and something waiting to get light, waiting for a disturbance, or using that small amount of light to do its job.
All right, should we keep climbing higher and see how it changes again? Okay, so Matt, I'm not scared of heights, but now we're what, five levels up, and the heart rate's going. I've got a shot of adrenaline. It's getting pretty tall up here.
Yeah, we're probably a bit over 20 metres, maybe 25 metres at eye level. And yeah, I'm a bit scared, I'll admit that. But what we're seeing now, because we've got over 20 metres, we're starting to see the tops of trees, the tops of small trees, and the tops of some canopy gaps. So we can see where the leaves are in the sun. We can start seeing some fruit and flowers on the top of the canopy. And a lot of the vines and the climbing palms that come up through the canopy and sit on the tops of trees. So we're starting to see that, and to me, that's just getting fascinating. It's almost doubled the number of species you can see up here. It's great.
And you can start to see blue sky. We're sort of popping out the top, and I mean, you can feel the temperature change up here as well. It's starting to get hot. There's a bit more breeze. The atmosphere is changing as well.
It is, and hopefully, because there's sensors all the way up this tower, hopefully we're detecting those changes in not only temperature and humidity, but the gas exchange between the atmosphere and the forest.
All right, well, you're right. The tower's shaking a bit. I'm shaking a little bit. The wind's picked up. Should we keep climbing?
We will.
It seems like the only sensible thing to do, really.
Just don't stand under me.
Oh, yep. All right, so you can hear the wind on the microphone. We're at the top of the tower. It's really shaking now. But, the view's worth the adrenaline. It's pretty spectacular.
It's fantastic up here. You never get sick of it. Eye level, we're probably 46, 47 metres above the ground, which is well above the highest tree. I can see the highest tree over there. It's 40 metres, so eye level, we're 7 metres above that. So we're looking down on anything here. So you can see the canopy is completely closed. It's a mosaic of tightly interwoven, overlapping tree canopies. It's quite interesting. On just about every canopy, you can either see a vine coming out, you can see fruit, flowers, a bird on there. Something's always happening up here in the canopy because it's the interaction with the full sunlight.
It's like a carpet almost. Like it's thick, there's no gaps. It's like you could almost run across the top of it.
Yeah, it's almost like you could jump into it and be cushioned by it. It is. There are gaps. If you look around, you can see trees that aren't officially emergent trees, but they are emerging 5 or 6 metres out of the canopy. You can see gaps, whether it be along a creek line or whether there's a tree fall. But generally, yeah, it's quite a smooth looking canopy.
Well, the adrenaline's been worth it, the view's been worth it, but I think our terra firma and a walk through the rainforest is calling.
I think we'll go. This 2 metre square platform, it's shaking a bit too much
It's
for
like
me.
A postage stamp, isn't it? All right, let's head down. So, Matt, we survived the tower. We're back on the forest floor. Where are we going to head to now?
Well, the tower sits right on the edge of a 25-hectare rainforest plot. So that's 500 metres by 500 metres. And that's quite large for a rainforest plot. There's only a handful in the world that are really that big or bigger. So it's quite special, certainly in Australia. So we'll head to the rainforest plot. We'll walk through it and we'll look at some of the research that we've done and some of the experiments that are continuously being done on the plot.
All right, I look forward to a bit of solid ground for a while. Let's head on.
The Robson Creek 25-hectare rainforest plot is one part of the Far North Queensland supersite. The other part is down the Daintree. There's a Daintree Rainforest Observatory, which has a canopy crane and a one-hectare plot. So together, they make up the Far North Queensland rainforest supersite. And that is one supersite in Australia. At the moment, there's 10 supersites in all of the important biomes or ecosystems around Australia. For example, there's one west of Sydney in the eucalypts. There's one in the mallee of South Australia. There's one in the eucalypts of Northern Territory. So we're trying to sample all of the different ecosystems in Australia. And it comes under the umbrella of TERN, which is the Terrestrial Ecosystem Research Network. And everything that's done under TERN should, in theory, be done exactly the same way. So any measurement we take in Far North Queensland is done the same way in the mallee of South Australia. So if we take vegetation readings, we put up a tower and take atmospheric readings, it'll be done in exactly the same way all around Australia. So it's essentially a network where we're collecting baseline data on the environment and looking how the forest changes through time.
And you compare that data across different sites in different ecosystems all around the country. It's fairly powerful stuff.
It's very powerful. We can compare across the country, and it's also being done across the world in very similar ways in America and Europe, across the world. And as well, I did mention the plants and the atmospheric readings, but pretty well anything that can be researched on these sites is being researched. Animals, soil, water, insects, plants, and the atmosphere. So it's pretty comprehensive.
Well, I can't wait to check it out. Let's go see what we can find.
Right, yeah. So we're walking along the northern edge of the plot, and we'll enter the plot about halfway along that northern edge. So we're walking along an old logging track that's all but grown over. We've had to chop and clear it away a little bit to make it obvious and easy to walk along. But even after 50 years, you can still see where logging trucks and tractors used to drive down.
It's a fairly easy walk as well, you know. I wouldn't call it a difficult bushwalk by any means.
No, well, part of the requirements of these plots and towers is that they're on a fairly homogeneous landscape. So it can't be too mountainous or hilly. The flatter the better, really. So it's quite a nice place to work in that sense.
For scientists of all levels of fitness.
Exactly right, or no levels of fitness.
Yeah, right.
You're listening to Off Track here on RN. I'm Joel Werner, and today Matt Bradford is taking us on a tour of the Robson Creek Rainforest Supersite in Far North Queensland. It's about a 15-minute walk from the Flux Tower to the edge of the research plot.
Righto, so we've just entered the 25-hectare plot, and you can see immediately that there's splashes of yellow paint in the forest. So what we did when we set the plot up, we immediately measured, we censused every tree, every stem, over 10 centimetres diameter at breast height.
And just to describe to the listeners, there are thousands of those trees. We're in densely packed rainforest. How many trees did you have to sample?
In the 25 hectares, we got 23,500 trees above 10 centimetres. But if you narrow that down, in a hectare, which is 100 by 100 metres, we've got about 1,000 trees per hectare, which equals about 40 trees in a 20 by 20 metre area. So it was a big job. Took us a number of years to finish it, but it paints a really good picture, so to speak, at the moment.
And what sort of measurements were you taking of those trees? Because obviously they're tagged. So when you were mentioning the yellow paint, I can see 24,850 on a tree over there. I can see some yellow marks here. But what measurements were you taking when you were sampling these trees?
Basically, what we wanted was baseline data on tree species, tree distribution, and biomass of the trees. We measured the diameter at breast height, which is about 1.3 metres of all those trees. We identified them to species, and on this plot we've got 209 species above 10 centimetres DBH. There's probably about 500 vascular plant species all up. We haven't finished surveying it yet. And the stems, we also gave them a spatial position, so we mapped them on the 25 hectare plot and gave them a height as well.
It's one thing to create baseline data for a plot like this, but I mean, I guess the true value of the work you've been doing is going to be seen in 5-10 years when you can track how these trees change over time.
Yeah, well, that's the main reason we're doing it. And you say 5 or 10 years, I'd say more like 50 or 100 years.
Yeah, right.
Because most trees in here do grow slowly, some grow quickly and die quickly. And we're also looking at key things like death of trees and recruitment into trees. So which trees are dying due to environmental, possibly climate change factors? Which trees are being recruited to replace them due to the same factors? So it's really a long-term data set.
The scale of the work you guys have done in here, it must be among a handful of projects that have been this comprehensive in the world.
It certainly is. It's very unique in Australia, and it's quite unique in the world. It's probably less than 10 in the world, certainly in rainforests where this sort of work has been done, yes. So we're walking through the middle of the plot along our narrow track that we've got. We're up on a ridge, and for whatever reason, because the soil is more fertile, a slightly different soil type, the trees up here are much bigger. They're up to a metre and a half in diameter. They're slightly larger. They're up to 30, 35 metres. And there's just a lot more wood and biomass in the forest in this part of the plot.
And what sort of trees are we talking about?
Well, from what we can see here in a 20 metre radius, there's probably about 40, 50 different tree species, so it's hard to narrow down. But your main large tree species are your Flinderzia species, and there's about four of them on the plot. In trade terms, they're referred to as maple, Queensland maple, maple silkwood, and they tend to grow into very large trees, reach the canopy, and get to very large dimensions. And they were one of the trees that were targeted for logging all over North Queensland.
So now that we're here, you were saying this is one of your favourite parts of the plot. Take us through some of the main outcomes. What do you hope to achieve here?
Well, this is a very good place to explain probably the best immediate outcome of this 25-hectare plot. We have done an estimate of the biomass and the amount of carbon in the forest, which is, it's unique to Australia. No one's tried to do that before in a large area of Australian rainforest, and it's quite unique to the world because people are just starting to do this now with all their big plots. So we can tell you relatively accurately how much carbon is in this forest around us at the moment.
And so, I mean, what is that number? What is that figure? You imagine it'd be huge. You can just look around you and the biomass is, it's dense.
It is. We can at the moment give you accurate measurements of above ground biomass, so what we can see. And the biomass, which is basically the weight, the mass of the forest, is about 430 tonnes or megagrams per hectare. Wow. In 100 by 100 metre area. So that's 430 tonnes of weight on top of 1 hectare. If you want to know the carbon, you basically divide that in half. So there's about 215 tonnes of carbon per hectare. So if you multiply that over the whole of the wet tropics in Australia, there's a lot of carbon stored in forests.
I mean, politically, that kind of information, getting an accurate figure, is so important, and it's only going to become more important, you'd imagine.
It is important. It is important to value what these forests give, but that's really only half the story. Now we're working out how much carbon is exchanged in the forest. So we can tell you right now there's about 430 tonnes right here. But how much is lost due to trees dying, decomposing? How much is gained from trees photosynthesising? And we imagine that changes from year to year, season to season. So it's a very dynamic forest. So that's the next part of the picture we have to paint.
Well, that's my next question. Where to next? You've had this amazing sampling effort. There's monitoring over, like you said, 50 or 100 years to come. But in more immediate terms, what are the next steps for you on this supersite?
The next steps are to answer some immediate, challenging, interesting research questions. For example, why does that tree grow there? Why is it growing next to four other trees of the same species of the same size? Is it because of disturbance? Is it because of a cyclone 200 years ago? Is it because that tree loves growing on that soil? As we say, there's about 500 species on this plot. Why do they grow where they grow?
And how do you answer those sort of questions?
Well, first you have to identify and map them spatially. So you have to say, righto, census all the trees and then analyse them in different ways and lay on top of that the soil drainage, soil moisture, the slope, the aspect.
And so then you can, I guess, figure out why this particular species survived and grew here but didn't over there.
Exactly. And in the longer term, we can say, righto, that tree survived in the last 200 years here, but now it's gone from there and something else has taken its place. So why has that happened?
Can you give us an idea of the age of some of these trees we're looking at?
It's very hard because in 100 years' time, we'll also be able to tell you how fast all the species grow. And from data that CSIRO has from the last 40 years all over North Queensland, we can tell you that trees grow fast and they grow slow. You really can't generalise. It depends on whether they've got a lot of sun, what soil they're on. So you look at this tree in front of us, it's about a metre in diameter.
What type of tree is it?
It's a Xanthophyllum octandrum, and I couldn't tell you the common name. It mightn't even have a common name, because it wasn't a common timber species, so it wasn't useful. It's about a metre diameter at 1.3 metres, it's a metre across. It's about 35 metres high. It's relatively fast growing, so I'd say it's about 400 years old.
Wow.
At a guess. Yeah, it could be out by 100 years either way, but it's fairly old.
But still, yeah, it's old. It's amazing. But what a beautiful plant.
It is, but then there's a tree 20 metres away of the same size, Rose Butternut, which was a timber tree. It's just as big, but it's probably only 200 years old because it's a fast-growing species that established when there was a cyclone, for example, 200 years ago, and it took advantage of it and grew very quickly.
So we've got a 200-year-old tree, a 400-year-old tree. What would be maybe the oldest tree you've got on the plot?
It's very hard to say, so we can only estimate, but taking things like growth rate into account, there's probably trees or species on this plot that are well over 1,000 years old, possibly 2,000 years old.
Yeah, right. Can we go check one out?
Let's have a look.
All right. So wait, this is the 1,000-year-old tree.
Probably.
That's amazing. It's so much smaller than
a lot
of the other trees we're talking about.
And it's incredibly dense. You can't tell, but it's...
So what sort of tree is it, Matt?
Its species name is Gossia grayi. Its common name's probably lignum. It wasn't used as timber, and it's probably not growing in gardens, so it doesn't really have a common name. And while it's only... Well, it's less than 20 centimetres diameter, let's say 18 centimetres diameter, my best estimate, it would be well over 1,000 years old, because we can look around and we can see small seedlings and saplings of this species in the understory, about 20 centimetres in height, and they'll sit there for 100, 200 years at that height because they get no light. They're waiting for a disturbance event. So judging on, you know, the amount of time that a seedling or a sapling will sit in the understory, and the fact that we've got 40 years of growth measurements of this species where it just doesn't grow. In fact, some of them have gone backwards in time. I think we can fairly confidently say that they're very old, and I'd say well over 1,000 years, yeah. The relevance of these slow-growing, very old trees is very important to this plot, because this plot is collecting baseline data to measure changes over time, and one of those changes is climate change. And while it's obvious that CO2 levels are rising, temperatures across the globe are rising, seeing those changes in a forest like this is much harder and may take decades and centuries to measure those changes. Because this tree has a lifespan of 500 to 1,000 years, you're really not going to see recruitment and death in a human lifetime of this species. So you'll have to study short-lived species, or you'll have to study a much greater area over much greater periods of time to see these effects of climate change in the plants of a rainforest.
It's a really magical place to be able to spend a morning. I could spend the next week here wandering around with you talking about trees. Thanks so much for letting me come on site today and for showing me just a small sliver of your super site.
Not a problem. Yeah, it is a beautiful day to be in the bush.
CSIRO's Matt Bradford at Australia's first large-scale rainforest research plot in far north Queensland. Head to the Off Track website to check out some images from the rainforest, or leave a comment to let us know what you thought of today's show. You can get to the Off Track website via the RN homepage. But that's it for this week. Until next time, bye for now.